Who is the Heiser? How are you?
Hello, Phil.
Lovely to see you. We've got a couple of things to talk about today, Steve. Just for our listeners, if you've got any questions about your visa status, you're probably fresh off the boat or whatever with your partner or whatever, morningbrew@rthk.hk. These things tend to be pretty simple for Mr. Barnes, don't they? Tend to be pretty simple.
It depends on the facts and circumstances, but, you know, we try and...
Terms and conditions apply.
We try and unravel what's going on and determine exactly who's going to get what visa permissions in order to do what
activity.
Well,
you can make somebody's day, Steve, by giving them some really nice, easy advice. We've got a couple of things to talk about today. We ended up last time... you tell me. Remind me what I said.
If I recall properly, you would like to cover the ground of what it was like to be an immigration consultant pre-internet.
Disruptive stuff pre-internet.
Yeah, we were talking about creative disruption and innovation.
Yeah.
And we finished with you suggesting that prior to 1996, when the internet became mainstream as an immigration consultant, things might have been very different then compared to how they are today because of the free and easy exchange
and how things are done. You know, you only have to look at the model of Facebook to see what we did. I mean, people do silly gags about putting post-its on people's chests. I come up and I like you and I pin it on your chest, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That was a disruptive media.
The big difference, I think, between, or the comment to make about what life was like as an immigration consultant before 1996, because remember I started in 1993.
Indeed.
And how it is today is that actually the immigration department hasn't moved on that much.
Do you want to carry on with this topic?
Well, you know, I'm a big fan, right, because they do a good job. But the reality is that the information systems that they've got don't readily interface with the population. So it isn't... there are some efficiencies that have been introduced, the ability to initiate certain types of cases online, certainly get extensions rolling online. But being able to progress an entire application from beginning to end through the use of an internet portal doesn't yet exist in the immigration department.
The tax boys have done it quite well. I think they've probably made a lot easier job tasks for themselves with the internet.
I think there may be separate issues, though, between the way the Immigration Department operate and the Inland Revenue Department, because the Immigration Department have got to look at certain documents which need to be originals.
Yeah, they've got to bring them in, haven't they?
But they do have a process, particularly, say, with the right of abode, where you can start the process off using an internet portal and submitting copies of documents, and then when it comes time to finally approving the application, certain documents, original documents, need to be visually cited. So
that's an interesting thing,
point,
Steve.
Of approval.
Like how to notarize scans. I'm sure somebody somewhere can do something.
Well, that's another question. Again, that's all sort of about tech and not so much about immigration. But back in 1996, when we were dealing with clients, there was very little opportunity to exchange documents via email, for example. They would always have to be assembled in hard copy file, and then we'd make a copy of the hard copy file, and then we'd submit the entire hard copy bundle down at the immigration department. Now, in many ways, that's still very much how we go about doing it. But as I say, extensions can be commenced online. You can certainly book appointments for certain types of immigration applications online. But some jurisdictions, like, for example, Australia, you can effectively have a relationship with the immigration agency there almost exclusively online, except for obviously when you have to have sort of face-to-face appointments with immigration officers to deal with certain matters. But we haven't got that yet, and I just wonder when the immigration department will have the systems in place to allow.
You must have talked about this with your lads, because you work with some computer, you know, clever guys, don't you? I mean, has that been brought up? You know, well, wouldn't it be better or easier or something?
Well, I mean, we've got, as you can appreciate, we've got a very sort of ambitious technology program in my firm, and we've got the back end that's kind of ready for the immigration department, actually, but they're just not ready for us, if you will.
Fair play. Well, let's hope they do in the end. I wanted to talk about something that I don't think we have to. The general topic of if you're a freelancer. I'm talking about a down-the-line freelancer. Anything you want to throw my way on this topic?
Well, if you don't need the permission of the immigration department to freelance whatever activity you do, be it...
Well, it means living here, of course.
Right. If you don't need the permission of the immigration department, it's not an issue. But if you're a foreign national and you want to come here and you need to and you wish to freelance, then that's a whole world of pain, frankly, because there isn't a freelancer visa as such.
So the question is, can I sponsor myself?
In short, no. In short, no. Effectively, if you're a freelancer, what you need to do if you need the Immigration Department's permission to undertake that freelance activity is to fall squarely within the parameters of the business investment visa, unless you've got a dependent visa, unless you've got another type of visa that allows you to get on with the things that you want to do freelance-wise without the specific permission of the department. But as a business investment visa applicant, there's a diametrically opposed issue in play, because the approvability test for a business investment visa is substantial contribution to the economy of Hong Kong.
Mm.
If you're a freelancer, the best you can do is substantial contribution to the economy of the freelancer.
Well, yes.
And therefore, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
So many freelancers that are here as existing residents, perhaps working for somebody else, wanting to stop working for their employer and then move into, as you would say, self-sponsored freelancing work. These people really need to put forward a plan to the Immigration Department that shows they're going to develop a business that goes beyond them just freelancing.
Yeah.
So there is a way for freelancers to get on with what they want to do, but I think they need to readjust their expectations of how their freelance business might look in order to get the Immigration Department to buy into that.
Mm.
But let me give you an example of how that's played out for a client of mine at the moment. He's been coming and going as a visitor for several years now, and he's a musician, he's a guitarist, a very accomplished guitarist. On a couple of occasions down the years, he's had applications in with the Immigration Department for permission to take up employment with a couple of employers. And during the currency of those applications, he tells me, it became apparent that the Immigration Department were not going to approve him. And he loves Hong Kong and he sees great opportunities here, but he's been very philosophical about it. He realizes that there's no shortcuts. Life in Hong Kong is worth having, and that he's prepared to do what is required to get the permissions that he wants to be able to do the things that he wants to do.
Right.
So 3 years ago, he embarked on a major, major saving plan. And he understood that he needed to gather together the capital that he needed to engage in a business that was aligned with his love of music,
yeah,
even though he's a guitarist. And so he's starting a new record label.
Okay.
He saved the money for 3 years. He's got a really interesting business plan. He knows he has to create jobs. He knows that he needs the right kind of business premises to get the Immigration Department to buy into his plan. He's going to put, effectively, his entire life savings on the line. And he's got enough money now because he's been smart about it. But really clever guy, understood quite a few years ago, in order for him to live here, he has to play according to the rules. And so the only opportunity for him to be, as you would say, a freelancer here is actually to go beyond freelancing. And because he's a musician, he can't just go beyond being a musician unless he goes into some other aspect of commercial activity that's related to music.
So
it made him really understand the market here, and he's creating his own record label. And I think he's going to be very successful.
So it's all go.
It's all go for him, yeah.
So the key thing there was not... Well, the key thing was that he's a smart enough fellow to do his savings plan, because as a musician, they don't go together.
Yeah, I mean, he wants to be in Hong Kong so much that he's prepared to do what it takes, no shortcuts, to actually, you know, get the permissions that he needs. And, you know, kudos to him for that.
Well, let's hope that's a success story. If you've got any questions for Steve Barnes, he knows what he's on about, the Hong Kong Visa Geezer, morningbrew@rthk.hk. As I said, very often it's like, I've moved here with my partner, can he or she get this, that and the other? I mean, it's second nature for him, but you know, if you want to hear it from the horse's mouth, do write on in. I'll ask you about something. I don't know about other areas of Hong Kong, but the government these days tends to hire people who are permanent residents only. Back in the old days, there was a certain type of contract that was like held against a government post.
This is before the handover, you mean?
No, it's since the handover. I believe it's since the handover, but it's all changed. So the bottom line is, you might be really, really skilled, but unless you've got a permanent ID, you've got an ID of some kind, but unless it's the permanent one, the 7-year one, they won't hire you.
I think it's government policy these days.
It is.
To extend
We know about it here.
Only to permanent residents, which makes sense.
Somebody who it wasn't always that way. You see, somebody who lives here, they want to stay here, they got real talent, they can't do it. I'm only thinking of our game, actually, broadcasting.
Fascinating.
They don't fall off trees in radio.
I had a meeting at the Immigration Department earlier this week, actually, on a non-name basis, trying to understand how we might get an application through the system for mm-hmm. a very much a round pegs in square holes type of expert. I won't mention the specific expertise, but very, very unique expertise in high demand in Hong Kong from museums, from the University of Hong Kong, from the big Hongs. They've all got a need for this particular person to be in Hong Kong doing, as you would say, freelance work for them.
That's right.
Very much around pegs in square hole situation. So we went down to the 24th floor of Immigration Tower and had a conversation with a couple of immigration officers there on a non-name basis, explained the dilemma that we had in terms of how we were going to go about trying to get this very unique, rare talent into Hong Kong to do what this person needs to do. And they gave us an interesting suggestion which we're going to follow, but I think it's quite topical that you want to talk about freelancers, because this person falls squarely within that.
That's super that freelancer, isn't it, you're talking about, if you like? You know, he's got obviously a skill that you think is pretty funky.
But this person's still a freelancer when all is said and done. And as this immigration officer said to me during our conversation, so this person has a real rare talent, and the reality is that there is a rare talent in play here.
I'm being badgered here by one of our listeners called Rick, and I know he's pulling my leg. He says, come on, ask him about the working ladies. Now, it's quite interesting, this one, because in Singapore, they do sort of prostitute visas. I don't think we've got
No, we don't have
that. They let them in for a year, then turf them out.
My understanding... We don't do this work.
No, I don't know. I'm surprised.
My understanding is that they come in on entertainer visas for 3 months at a time.
Well, you see, I mean, it's not kosher either way, is it? They're not, like, acknowledged, because, you know, I talked to my friend Tracy Kwan in New York, and she's always on about sex workers' rights. Big deal in America. But we haven't quite got there.
I think if the Immigration Department knew that there was a sex dimension in play, they'd have something to say about it. But my understanding, and it's purely anecdotal, is that they come in entertainer visas for 3 months at a time. Now my office and my studio are in Wan Chai, right? And I live in Wan Chai. And I do a lot of walking up and down Lockhart Road. I can assure you, the ladies on the street there, their faces change. So I suspect they're coming in at 3 months at a time on entertainer visas.
Yeah, but it's interesting. You know, in Singapore, as they do, there is a niche for that job. You don't have to hide it. And I believe it's 1 year. It's like it's up there with all the foreign help stuff.
Winter, where do you get your information from?
I can't remember. I think it's a thing called the newspaper. I'm not sure. Could be the internet.
Do they still exist?
Could be the internet. I don't know. All right, Steve, I think we're going to put the lid on it for today. Thanks very much. No questions, but do keep them coming, because Steve visits, I don't know, every month or so, don't you?
When you have me back.
Anytime you want, mate. Thank you very much.